It's like freaking soccer. It's a tie. Yeah. Nobody has won. And that is why everybody hates it, because nobody here, nobody here likes soccer. Okay.
Excuse me. Our family, you don't even know me. Our family is a soccer family. That's it. Come on, Mercedes. You're from Puerto Rico.
No, senora. We do not do soccer. Okay. It is
what
baseball.
What do you do?
Baseball? It's baseball and basketball.
You're on the wrong side of history. No.
No, no, no. Mm-mm. You are. Go back to England. Okay.
Welcome to Rivera and Reeves, the podcast where we break through the bias, report the news, and occasionally trip over our soapboxes while ranting about the headlines.
Every week, we tackle the biggest stories with sharp analysis, unfiltered honesty, and just enough sarcasm to keep it fun.
So pull up a chair, grab your coffee, and join us as we wade through the spin, because the media is trash and we have zero patience for their nonsense.
Hey, friends, and welcome back to another episode of Rivera and Reeves. I'm Mercedes, and I'm here with my friend Rachel. Say hello, Rachel.
Hello, Rachel.
Yay. And if you are new here, we are so glad that you're here. And we're also very excited for you because you have now discovered your new favorite podcast.
Yay.
And so we recommend that you hit that follow button so you can find us every other time that we drop a new episode. And here's a bonus. If you don't want to be listening to those ads that interrupt us and our very cohesive flow, I suggest that you guys hit the link in the show notes and consider becoming a paid subscriber to our Substack. And there you will get a dedicated ad-free feed for all of our new episodes. You'll get full access to our archives and our bonus content. Not to mention that you'll be supporting some independent media, which is like it is totally the in thing to do right now. So if you want to be with the in crowd, get on board. Okay. Speaking of ad free, this just popped into my head. Have you ever seen these kids? They were talking with their parents and their parents were trying to give them an explanation of how, like, when we were kids, as in you and I and these parents, you couldn't just like pause the TV or you couldn't just like skip over the ads.
Yeah. There was no TiVo or Netflix.
Anything. Like it was the built in bathroom break or
that was,
break
yeah,
or whatever.
You're running and you're going into the kitchen to get something and you hear, it's on. Hurry, hurry, hurry.
Exactly.
And you're sprinting back. Yeah.
So these kids were like, I don't know, like 10 years old or something like that. And they're like, oh, you mean like vacation TV?
What does that mean? Vacation TV?
Because when you go to hotels.
Oh, they're, yeah.
It's just like regular television, typically still nowadays, unless you're streaming an app or something like that. And it has commercials. And so their association was like, oh, you mean like vacation TV?
Oh, how funny. I've never heard that before. But yeah, that sounds about right.
I thought that was really funny. So what are we talking about in today's episode?
Everything.
Well, I mean,
it doesn't stop. Nothing stops anymore.
The difficult part is just like deciding what to talk about, because it used to be like, are we going to have anything to talk about? Yeah. Now we have too much. And today, our focus is going to be around sounding the alarm on the constitutional crisis that the United States is currently facing because of Trump. And also partially because of J.D. Vance, because I think that's really kind of how it started, because of that post, that X post that he did.
Yeah.
But we're going to clarify, because I've been getting a lot of these questions. Mm-hmm. What is he doing that's illegal, that everybody keeps saying that he's illegal? Is it unconstitutional? Mm-hmm. Are we in an unconstitutional crisis or whatever? And I find it really funny because there's been a few times in my comments where there are people that follow me that for the most part, I kind of recognize. My assumption is that they
lean conservative.
Yeah, that they lean conservative, but they're just saying, oh, but you know, I really like what he's doing, but you know, what he is doing is unconstitutional. I'm like,
how?
Is it though?
How? Explain it to me.
Explain how.
That's the thing that no one's doing. Everybody's saying we're in a constitutional crisis, but I don't think what you're saying means what you think it's saying. Yeah. It's not Princess Bride.
Yes, exactly. Or like I always go, when someone says something, I'm like, ¿cómo se fue? Excuse me?
I just want the same people who are telling us we're in a constitutional crisis to define constitutional crisis.
You mean the same people that are almost like this close to saying that Elon is pushing some misinformation conspiracy theory, that there's misuse of funds and an abuse of funds in the federal government?
Fraud. Some of those people who are standing up on the podium outside of every federal building in D.C., shouting that President Musk is putting us in a constitutional crisis. I would like them to define it and explain why and how and what's illegal. Tell me.
While they sing, we shall overcome.
Oh my gosh, that was so, you guys, I know this is very like what's the word when it's all online? This is very online.
It's very online.
Can we find that? And
yes,
and
plug
that in somehow, because that's, I hadn't heard it. And I was listening to a podcast last night while prepping dinner. And he said, I'm going to play this. And I apologize in advance. And he played this song that some Democrat.
I'll play it for everyone because it is just so crazy. We're getting a little off track, but you know, bear with us. You know how it goes here. If you're a regular listener, you know how it goes here. So there was a federal union protest. I can't remember what union it was. It's like FG or I don't know, whatever. And it's literally, I hate to say this, I don't like to do this whole generational battle thing, but we're just kind of in the midst of it. But it was like a bunch of boomers that are, they're, you know, older individuals up on the whatever stage behind this podium. Mm-hmm. And this woman, who's probably well into her 60s, is singing some tune about how awful Elon Musk is, how they won't submit to him. And it's very reminiscent of the kind of We Shall Overcome civil rights
too.
Songs from the 60s.
But and like it, horrible and oh, so out bad. Of tune.
Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
Tell me.
Which side are you on? Which side are you on? We'll fight against George. We'll fight Elon Musk. No Elon's kept within our walls. We'll fight from dawn to dusk. Oh, which side are you on? Which side are you on?
Tell me.
Which side are you on? Which side are you on? Trump's coming for our unions. He wants us all to fail. He wants us to bow to him, but we want him in jail.
And it sounds like what Saturday Night Live would do to parody what these people are doing. They're taking themselves so seriously that they would even rise to the level of talking on the conference call the night before, like, who's going to come up with the song? Which of you wonderkins are going to write the lyrics?
Because somebody wrote this.
Somebody sat down and thought about this, like, yeah. Actually put energy into it. It's just, oh my gosh.
Well, it's clear. I mean, you see those type of images. You see that currently the Democrats are just staging protests after protests after different department buildings. Mm-hmm. And the media and the Democrats are just really struggling with messaging and what to do. And they're trying to find what to sink their teeth into to see what it is that the American people will react to, mm-hmm. to see if they can get their footing. Because the fact is that right now, the Democrat Party is sitting at like 32% approval rating or something like that.
It's historically low. It's really bad.
It's really bad. And so they just really cannot figure out what to do. And it's like in our last episode where they're trying to, you know, find their footing. Mm-hmm. They talked about possibly shutting down the federal government, which would be something that, I mean, that could happen in March. But then the other talking point that was bubbling up was the constitutional crisis talking point. And so the big question now is, are we in a constitutional crisis? Because clearly the memo has dispersed. It has gone out. Mm-hmm. And the media is talking about it. The Democrats are talking about it. And it's some verbiage of either, because I even saw Chris Murphy, where he said something like a death to our democracy or mm-hmm. something along those lines. Like, clearly this is just another form of, and I think you even posted about this, about how constitutional crisis is just another way of saying fascist, dictator, danger. Like, it's again still projecting.
That's the new media narrative. And we've gone into this on podcasts. We've both talked about it on our individual social media feeds. It should be no surprise that this is happening. And also, it should reinforce the idea, just the fact, that the media really does work together as a wing of the Democrat Party. They are told from the top down what the narrative is going to be, and they run with it. That's why, like we've talked about before, you have a talking point and everybody's on board within 24 hours and they're all parodying it. Think about J.D. Vance is weird. Do you remember that?
Yeah, he's wearing eyeliner.
Every single progressive outlet was running with it. And the exact same thing is happening here. And they did the exact same thing with Trump is a fascist dictator. He is like Putin. He's like Hitler. They all did that in some variation for weeks, months. And now they really can't do the fascist dictator trope anymore. I mean, he's literally sitting next to Obama laughing at Jimmy Carter's funeral.
Also, it's kind of a hard talking point when you contributed to the cover up of Biden not being like here with us and lied to the American people.
Exactly.
Where the assumption would be then we voted for this individual. He was not well. You helped cover up the fact that he's not well. And we don't even know exactly. There's, you know, suspicion and there's talk about who was in charge. But the fact is that we don't really know 100% exactly
about
how things were running.
Talk about a constitutional crisis. I mean, that's check yourself before you wreck yourself. That's what we used to say. But they are really going with they can't say that the fascist dictator anymore because he's in office. That clearly didn't work because over half of the country voted for him. They don't believe you when you say that. And so now they're really going to hammer home this. We're in a dangerous place and he's put us there. He is going to drag down the democracy. The Republic is in shambles.
Yeah.
That's what they're going with.
And of course, this is essentially, if you guys aren't familiar with the term, it's essentially like astroturf is what ends up happening. So astroturfing is when the media starts to project the same message at the same time, because the goal is that if you hear it enough, you're going to believe it. You're not going to question it. You're going to assume. And you know what? I don't even fault people most of the time, because normal people who are not like ourselves, who do not have the time, the ability or the inclination to consume and dissect what the heck is going on to the level that we do. The natural thing is that if you keep hearing it, you have to believe it's all. Well, you can't just keep saying things and think it's not true. Well, let me tell you that the constitutional crisis is not upon us. And I could even argue that if it were to be upon us, it's not Trump. It's these district court judges, but I will get into that in a moment.
I don't know. Going back to what you just said, though, I think that there is a level of engagement in the American public right now more than ever.
Oh, for sure.
Before. I mean, you and I are weird.
That's what I'm saying. I'm trying. Look, I'm setting the bar here. Like, we are the benchmark and everybody else is normal.
Yeah.
And so that's what I'm saying is I get that you are not like me. And that is okay, because you actually have time to go out and touch grass and be with your family. And we're just like, I mean, Rachel and I were texting each other. I shared it on our stories about what is happening right now.
Yeah.
But I want to break down the constitutional crisis. Are we there? And what is Trump actually doing? So I found this article, this opinion article, or sorry, it was from the editorial board, which is opinion, but on the Wall Street Journal, that I thought gave a really great explanation. And that article itself will be part of our sources in the show notes if you guys want to read it for yourself. But I'm going to summarize it here for you. And it was basically the argument that I have been making in the last episode. Mm-hmm. If you look, and actually the episode before that, because we talked about the birthright citizenship issue. If you were to categorize what Trump is doing, it falls into three categories. It falls into, he has every right to do. The second category would be like there's gray area, which happens a lot in the federal government or the government in general, because the government gives you like generalities and then you kind of push them to see on whether or not that's something that you can do. This is something that everybody has done.
And every president pushes boundaries to see what
they can do.
They can get away with, really.
Correct. And then the third one is where you could say that it is a clear violation, but he is violating it on purpose in order to force a constitutional question. And we have also seen this. This is literally how Roe versus Wade happened. And it is literally how it got overturned. And that is really the easiest way to give you guys an example of this has happened before. Honestly, there would be no purpose for the Supreme Court if things like this didn't happen.
Right.
Am I crazy?
No, not at all. This is the reason why this has happened numerous times with other presidents. It's just this argument, this conversation will not be brought up, because what Trump is doing when Trump pushes legal boundaries in order to affect change, that makes people queasy.
Queasy or crazy?
Yeah. If President Obama does it for DACA, then everybody's fine.
Yeah, let's run through these categories. So first of all, like I mentioned, he has legal grounds. So not everything that he's doing is really even controversial or new, for that matter. Right. Okay. Some of his decisions, like pausing discretionary spending, reforming federal hiring rules, fall right within the purview of the president. Like he has every right to do it.
Yeah.
For example, let's bring up our former best friend, President Biden, where he did the same thing when he paused grant disbursements under the 2021 infrastructure bill and the 2022 Inflation Reduction Act to align with his policies,
right,
which, by the way, the Inflation Reduction Act, which was supposed to reduce inflation, which was a climate change bill.
That they lied to us. Yes.
Also, by the way, this happened overnight. I don't know if you saw it, but.
Oh, with Lee Zeldin?
Yes.
Gold bars? What's going on? Every day, there's something new and exciting.
So here's a perfect, here's like a little example of this. There was a Project Veritas video, and I'm talking Project Veritas, not O'Keefe, okay? Because remember, they split. I'm just clarifying that. So Project Veritas did one of their like underground hidden camera videos. Usual case, they're out on a date with some person, and this person is with the EPA. And this was before Biden was out. And he is talking about how the EPA has all of this money thanks to the Inflation Reduction Act, where he clearly goes and he says, yeah, Biden's climate bill. So even then, they knew it was a climate bill. And it was this moment where this guy also says, look, we're just trying to get all of this money out the door before Trump comes into office and his administration can stop it. And he literally used the term, it's like dumping gold bars off the Titanic.
So I do, you know, the Inflation Reduction Act, have you heard of it?
Yes.
Okay, Biden's climate law?
Yes.
Yeah. So I do IRA implementation. I work with, like, Biden appointees. The money that we've given out, like, tens of billions of dollars, like, over the last year. Over the last year, we've given out, like, $50
million. $50
million? Billion, with a B.
$50 billion.
Yes. For climate things. So like to go work for one of these places, I think would be really cool.
What are the places that you've given them to?
It's only been a few weeks, so it's a little early. But like green banks. So they're like nonprofit institutions that are like making it more financially feasible to build renewables, to do like climate projects. I do implementation now. So I do like how do you spend $100 billion? How do you make sure that like they're the proper, well, until recently, how do you make sure the proper like processes are in place to like prevent fraud and to prevent abuse and to like ensure that like we are funding like good paying jobs and that sort of stuff. Now it's just how to get the money out as fast as possible before they come in and like fuck.
Really?
Yeah.
You can do that?
Yeah. To an extent, just like within reason.
Yeah. Good.
Yeah.
Why not? Because if it's not gonna.
Basically, that's where it all is now. I mean, now it all is like. It truly feels like we're on the Titanic and we're throwing like gold bars off the top hatch.
Does it really? It kind of feel weird.
It's weird. I mean, it's not good vibes. It's not good. I mean, everyone's very sad.
Then last night, Zeldin made an announcement where he filed that back in his back pocket, and he had his staff at the EPA investigate that. And they have currently handed over, they've found some concerning things. I don't know exactly to what extent, but I think it's over $20 billion. That looks like it was literally just dumped on NGOs, and they don't know exactly who. So they're not even 100% sure if it met the purposes it was supposed to meet, which is
because they don't even
investigate.
Like we talked about in the last episode, they don't even keep track of where the money goes. It just goes to someone. We don't know what they do with it.
So Zeldin made an announcement that they did the research. They were looking for the gold bars. He believes that they have found the gold bars, and they handed it over to the DOJ to investigate.
An extremely disturbing video circulated 2 months ago featuring a Biden EPA political appointee talking about how they were tossing gold bars off the Titanic, rushing to get billions of your tax dollars out the door before Inauguration Day. The gold bars were tax dollars, and tossing them off the Titanic meant the Biden administration knew they were wasting it. Following this revelation, during my meetings with members of Congress, I made a very important commitment to them and to the American people, which I reiterated at my confirmation hearing, that if confirmed, I would immediately get a full accounting. Fortunately, my awesome team at EPA has found the gold bars. Shockingly, roughly $20 billion of your tax dollars were parked at an outside financial institution by the Biden EPA. This scheme was the first of its kind in EPA history, and it was purposefully designed to obligate all of the money in a rush job with reduced oversight. Even further, this pot of $20 billion was awarded to just eight entities that were then responsible for doling out your money to NGOs and others at their discretion with far less transparency. Just under $7 billion was sent to one entity called the Climate United Fund. I'm sure you and I now have some of the same questions. How do these organizations decide how to allocate funding? How much money have they given out so far and to whom? Are there any former Biden EPA staffers who are now working at these entities? Let me make one thing abundantly clear. At this point, there is zero reason to suspect any wrongdoing by the bank. Here's my position as EPA administrator. The financial agent agreement with the bank needs to be instantly terminated, and the bank must immediately return all of the gold bars that the Biden administration tossed off the Titanic. EPA needs to reassume responsibility for all of these funds. We will review every penny that has gone out the door. I will be referring this matter to the Inspector General's office and will work with the Justice Department as well.
The days of irresponsibly shoveling boatloads of cash.
So we'll see what happens with that. But all of that to say, Trump is not doing anything differently. Like, all of this stuff is his proposals of freezing, doing temporary freezes, reforming hiring rules. It's like the example that I gave a few episodes back about the hugging the kittens example. Mm-hmm. What ends up happening is that Congress says you can have this money to go hug kittens. Mm-hmm. And it's under the Department of Kitty Hugging. I don't know, mm-hmm. whatever. And then it is the executive branch. So whoever the head of that department is, along with the executive, which is Trump, the chief executive, to decide what kitties get it, mm-hmm. how much they get, what are the requirements in order for mm-hmm. this kitty cat to get hugged? Do you know what I mean? That is how
often we're finding out. And this is a whole other rabbit hole that we'll have to go down. But with the USAID, what specifically like Mike Benz has been talking about is there's this fine tangled web where we are giving money to foreign countries through NGOs, through grants, to kind of do like nation building. But the reason is also because there's a kickback from that foreign country. As it pertains to us as Americans, there's different reasons based on elections and based on previous agreements, and it all can seem, some would argue that it is scandaloso. And I think people are concerned right now, very concerned about the wrong things. They're concerned about certain pauses being put on money when really we need to be concerned about the money. Where is this money going?
Well, and I get people being concerned about the pauses because, of course, there's stories where
humanitarian aid is being paused for some reputable charitable organizations, Samaritan's Purse and things like that. But it's not an indefinite ending of aid. It's a pause for us to get our house in order, really.
Yeah, because the fact is we don't know where any of this money is going. And I think it's a big issue. Like Catherine... Oh, I forgot her last name. Starts with an H. She was with CBS, got fired.
I know who you're talking about, but yes, I'm driving.
Anyway, she went independent and she recently did a report, which I was going to include. I need to start my newsletter back, but where USAID money was used to fund like one of the leaders of Al-Qaeda and educate. Yes. So he used it to educate himself mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. to then go when it was already concerning and problematic of his background. I can't remember exactly how he went about it, but then he went back and he is actively engaging with Al-Qaeda against the United States.
Yeah, so these so we're are funding the kind of terrorism. Thing- so yes, maybe a slight pause for some self-reflection would be a good idea. I understand that there's always going to be some negative fallout, and that is a shame. But if we continue this type of mismanagement, it will only be to our demise. So what we're saying is right now, Trump, not everything he's doing, not even any of it, from what we can ascertain, is illegal or controversial.
It's not unprecedented or controversial.
It's not new. Every president has this. He can exercise this power right now.
Exactly. So then the second area is what would be the legal gray area. Now, and this is where things get interesting because of some of Trump's plans to dismantle certain government entities like the USAID, which is one
now,
of the
ones.
Now,
he's not dismantling it, though, if I'm understanding correctly.
That's
he's going to slide it under Secretary
correct.
Of State, right?
So that's the language is like he's dismantling it. He's getting rid of it. Now, USAID is going to be shifted under the State Department because they thought of themselves as some kind of independent organization that wasn't accountable to anybody, even though they were using taxpayer money. Mm-hmm. Which, as you know very well, if you were a listener of Rivera and Reeves, you know that there is always strings attached when you're using taxpayer money. Okay.
And not to mention, since they were kind of assuming or acting as a independent agency, they were also being used by the other agencies, CIA, FBI, the State Department.
Yeah.
To do DOJ, whatever, to do
operations, essentially.
Yes, using this quote unquote slush fund, the USAID. So maybe just scooting it under the State Department so it has a little accountability is not a horrible idea.
So the legal gray area is like, to what extent can he quote dismantle or restructure these agencies? Now, I think the USAID he's completely fine with. Even when the bill was originally written, it was supposed to be in conjunction with the State Department. Mm-hmm. There's one that's getting a lot of attention right now that actually I think a lot of people aren't familiar with, which is the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, or the CFPB. Now, the CFPB was founded in, I think, 2008, and this was around the time of the housing crisis and how a lot of the financial institutions basically took advantage of people. And we had the subprime mortgage situation and everything like that. So this was a project of Elizabeth Warren, where it was this agency that was actually created under the Federal Reserve.
Oh, good. Another agency created.
Perfect. But it gets funded by the Federal Reserve. It doesn't get funded by taxpayer money. So it doesn't get funded through the Treasury. Now, their purpose was to hold financial institutions, businesses, this sort of thing, accountable for taking advantage of their customer, credit card companies, payday loan type services that were considered predatory. And this particular agency has recovered, I think it was like maybe up to $20 trillion that have gone back to Americans who have been abused with fees or charges or that sort of thing. So that was how it was created. Now, the problem that has happened with, which sounds like good. It sounds good for the most part. And Anna Kasparian from the Young Turks has talked a lot about this, and she's followed along with them. And for the most part, it sounds like a good program. Now, the claim is that they have been using their funds to play favorites with certain banks and things that will, for example, like a bank that does business with some kind of policy, I don't know, like 2A, AI or something like that, that doesn't align with the Biden administration at the time, then they were investigating them or abusing their powers to investigate them, as opposed to what would be someone who is doing like green energy type stuff.
Right. So there was like that whole social credit score.
Yeah. So it was kind of falling. And that is the claim. Now, Kasparian says that is not the case. The White House put a memo of this is specifically why we're opposed to them and why we're looking at the CFPB. Mm-hmm. But the question is can he just dismantle the CFPB or restructure it?
Is it constitutionally protected, or is it?
It was via legislation. It was, you know, like this isn't an executive order.
He's going to bump up against this with everything. It's the same thing. If you think that they're talking about we're in a constitutional crisis right now, just wait until they start making changes within the Department of Education, because people are going
to freak out. Yeah.
Oh, they're going to lose it, because that is something that people, it's widely misunderstood, the powers of the federal government versus the state when it comes to education. Oh my gosh. I mean, I could go on. We won't.
And the thing is that this isn't unprecedented. Like, we've seen things happen like this all the time. Presidents and past presidents challenge and restructure things all the time to see if they can create the agency to work for them and their policies more. And just typically, it is not opposed to.
Of course not. This is just, it was for several reasons. First of all, it's Trump. So anything he does is going to have intense opposition. But I think it's because he's not just doing one type of adjustment or change or dismantling. He is just coming in like a wrecking ball and targeting, and he's got the minions, and they're just targeting all the different agencies. I mean, they're looking into everything. And so it feels unsettling.
Yeah, it feels unsettling because it's like
a volcano, basically.
Really fast and furious.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, President Biden, remember when he did the student loan forgiveness? Like, he was just like, I can go ahead
just gonna
and do
it.
Student loan. And then
he had to have known and been advised that that was going to have to go to the Supreme Court. This is what they do. They push up against the boundaries to see how, you know.
Think about how he tried to redefine or restructure OSHA order to push vaccine mandates.
Because they were going to, OSHA employees were going to walk into every single business around America. If you had less than or more than, 100 employees, you had to mandate them to get a vaccine. Like, looking back on it now, it's so wild. And can you imagine? I can't imagine, because it's kind of happened. If Trump was to just stand up there and be like, oh, by the way, I'm going to mandate that all of you get X, Y, or Z, they would freak out. But since it was altruistic and for a good cause, and it was Biden, it was a progressive, we can let him try his thing and we're going to support it, kind of. So this isn't new.
No. And what's happening is, so every time you guys hear that talking point of, oh, Trump has been stopped by this judge or this judge, all of these judges are just giving temporary, like TROs, temporary restraining orders or injunctions, mm-hmm. which means we need to stop and hold in place in order for me to have time to actually evaluate the case and provide a ruling. Nobody has won anything. Yeah. Okay.
But that is not how the media will cover it. They will play on people's ignorance when it comes to these kinds of terms and phrases and judicial rulings. Like, people aren't going to necessarily understand what an injunction is. So they're going to just say it and hope that everybody thinks that's a win.
And then it becomes a talking point of Trump is losing. Yeah. Like, nobody had, the point is that it's like freaking soccer. It's a tie. Yeah. Nobody has won. And that is why everybody hates it, because nobody here. Nobody here likes soccer, okay?
Excuse me, our family, you don't even know me. Our family is a soccer family. That's it. Come on, Mercedes. You're from Puerto Rico.
No, senora. We do not do soccer, okay? It is
what
baseball.
What do you do?
Baseball and basketball.
You're on the wrong side of history. No.
No. Mm-mm. You are. Go back to England, okay? Go back
on
your
just
vacation.
There.
But the point is that in these legal gray areas, this is not anything new. The process is working how it's supposed to work, which is literally the opposite of a constitutional crisis. Mm-hmm. In fact, you could argue, because there was a question, that judge in Rhode Island, mm-hmm. when he ruled that Trump couldn't freeze the funds, like he had to release the funds, it was there was a concern about whether this was an abuse or, which is what triggered J.D. Vance to do an ex post, which then also led to this entire, because it sounded like from Vance's ex post that he was proposing that the administration just ignore the order.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what he was saying. He was just pointing out that the judicial branch should not be telling the executive branch that they can't do something that's well within their purview.
Yeah, because then you have a bunch of rogue judges, like some judge in Washington State can be like, no, Trump, you can't do that. That's not how America works.
No.
Friends. Like, so you can't do that.
He did clarify that that order was because of the EO that was very sweeping and wasn't specific, but it didn't apply to the rights that are specifically assigned to the executive branch, mm-hmm. especially when we have bills, for example, that will include within them with the consult or under the supervision, or like, I'm making up language, but that's essentially mm-hmm. what it says, of the president or the director of the department. So what would end up happening is that Trump would have to be more specific on how to handle these funds.
Mm-hmm.
So that if that clarification hadn't been made, you could argue that that would have been a constitutional crisis, because the judge is telling the president, two separate branches, that he can't do what's within his right to do. And that also did not happen.
So many things not happening.
Yeah.
But they're going to say they're happening, but they're
so
not happening.
Let's chill. Now let's talk about these clear violations where he's clearly being I know if you can't read my tone, I'm being sarcastic, where he's clearly being unconstitutional. And there's two of them specifically. Now, there is that ending birthright citizenship. And as I have explained in a past episode, but just in case you're new here, let me recap it real quick. The 14th Amendment was created specifically because the issue was when we had slaves where they didn't really have, they didn't come here with citizenship. They didn't have documentation. They had children. And so there was this question about whether or not they should be treated as U.S. citizens and if they should have U.S. citizenship. The 14th Amendment happened to give these individuals citizenship. Then later, there was a question of a Chinese migrant, I believe, and whether or not they had a right to citizenship. The case was the United States versus Wong Kim Ark. And he was born in San Francisco, by the way. Okay. He did not, he was not born in another country and came over illegally. So he was born in San Francisco in 1873 to Chinese immigrant parents. And then he was denied re-entry to the U.S. after he did a trip abroad to China due to the Chinese Exclusion Act. And he challenged this denial, arguing that he was a U.S. citizen by birth, meaning that he had a right to enter the United States. And the Supreme Court ruled in his favor, affirming that anybody born on U.S. soil, regardless of their parents' nationality or immigration status, except for like diplomats and that sort of thing, is automatically a U.S. citizen under the 14th Amendment. Okay. Now.
But this gets sticky.
It gets sticky because his parents were here legally.
So that therein lies the rub. That is different than the argument that's being used for birthright citizenship. Now, it's basically just if you have your feet on American soil and you're born here, regardless of your parents' status, you have right to birthright citizenship, which was not by the reading of the 14th Amendment.
The original
intent of citizenship.
At least that's the argument that Trump is making.
Right.
So that's why he is, quote unquote, put an end birthright citizenship.
He's pushing it to the Supreme Court. It's a question that needs an answer. It needs to be dealt with, especially now in our current situation, the influx of illegal immigrants who are coming here with a legal status and having children here. It needs to be resolved. He's doing that knowing it will have to push the question up to the Supreme Court.
And of course, that is the process of checks and balances.
Do what do you know?
Else no. Checks your work, right? So this isn't like unprecedented. It's just crazy to me. Like you had Biden running
they
around.
They know it. I think that they know it. They're
no,
just,
obviously.
They have whiplash right now because it's everything's happening so fast. And every single person he has working in his cabinet or in that administration is working at the same speed that he's working. And it's just overwhelming for them. I mean, I saw someone on Twitter the other day who lives in D.C., and was like walking by the or driving by the White House. It was like 4:45 in the morning. All the lights are on.
Yeah.
In the whole, and they're just like, I guess they're up working. And it's, yeah, they are.
They are.
Where Biden might do one of these things like once a year. Trump is like, nope, we're doing 17 on Tuesday.
And look, here's the deal. I'm not a fan of executive orders, by the way. Let's just put an asterisk on that. I would prefer that things go through proper legislation.
Yeah, but I don't love pardons either. We've talked about this.
Yeah,
but this they're here and they all have used them and that he's just doing what presidents do.
They know this. For example, I saw Chris Murphy, who is a senator out of New Hampshire, who has made himself like the figurehead of the anti-Elon Musk Trump Doge movement, right? So he was on CNN with Caitlin Collins talking about this.
Yeah, listen, I mean, this isn't hyperbole to say that we are staring the death of democracy in the eyes right now. The centerpiece of our democracy is that we observe court rulings, criminal court rulings, civil court rulings, and constitutional court rulings. No one is above the law. And whether we like it or not, the courts interpret the law. So, yes, throughout the history of the United States, the courts have made rulings on when the executive branch is exercising legal power and when they are going beyond the power that they have, either constrained by statute or by the Constitution, just as they regularly rule on whether or not individuals have complied with the law or violated the law, whether those be civil laws or criminal laws. If the President of the United States says, you know what, I don't care what the courts say, I'm going to do whatever the hell I want, that's essentially the end of the rule of law, because if the president isn't bound by our laws and the Constitution, then why would anybody else be bound by our laws and the Constitution? This is a really dire moment. And no, so far, they've been talking tough, but I think largely have complied with these court orders. I think there's going to be a question as to how well they've complied with the orders. But if they were to outright ignore an order, as J.D. Vance and Elon Musk are suggesting, that is maybe the greatest challenge to our democracy in any of our lifetimes.
If you listen to him closely, this entire exchange was wild to me because he is talking about that we're looking at a threat, that this is broken, that it is the death of our democracy. Like, he's doing this entire speculation on the front end. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, yes, it's true. They haven't necessarily violated any of the orders.
Like, their intention is
it's the speculation of the possibility of, because he could do this and he's so crazy and so dangerous. Clearly, we're under threat and it's the death of democracy. When he literally, within a half a breath later, he's, yeah, I know, he hasn't really done anything that's been seriously bad.
Exactly. You know what I mean? It's the Trump is Hitler, but I'm going to sit next to him at a funeral and we're going to be bros. Like, they don't mean it. And then there are some people who, like Joy Reid, my favorite, who I think literally thinks that this is the end of America. I mean, she is. It's like weeping, gnashing of teeth every night on her show. But for the most part, they don't all believe it. They're just following their outline. They've been given a script and they're following it. That's it.
And when he was in the presser, which we're about to go into, by the way, because in addition to everybody being so concerned about a constitutional crisis, when, as we have laid out, clearly is not happening. The other thing is that Elon Musk is actually really the president.
Right. That's the other talking point. President Musk.
And there's also this underlining discussion of, like, the stuff isn't really that bad in the federal government with the fraud and the spending.
Right.
And it's really just a small amount in comparison to, like, the giant budget. And I'm like, look, I don't care if it's 22 cents. Mm-mm. I don't want it going where it's not.
That's not making the argument that they think it's making. All that tells me is our budget is ridiculous. If DOGE finds $59 million, okay, they've been finding billions and billions of dollars since they started, okay? And everybody's like, well, it's just not that much, though. That's a drop in the bucket. I'm like, that is not a good argument. That's not a good argument. That just tells me that we need to cut this deficit. We need to not spend all the money. Our budget is too big. If $100 billion isn't that much money, we've got a problem. That is ridiculous.
Well, this whole claim that Murphy was making that, like, Trump, during that presser with Elon Musk, said, I'm going to follow orders. Like, I don't like them. I think they're delaying things. I think this is unnecessary. They're making it hard. I was elected to do this, but we're going to follow the orders.
He said, like, we follow the courts. That's fine.
Calm down. So then we have, which I thought, by the way, Elon Musk, they announced this presser in the Oval Office with Elon Musk and the president and Elon Musk's little boy, little X, which.
Okay. So is his name really X?
His name is like
Xavier
some formula.
Or something?
No, it's literally like some mathematic equation or something like that. And there's an X in it. And so they just call him little X. I'm not even kidding. Okay. This is Elon
unfortunate.
Musk.
Unfortunate.
Okay.
Yeah.
So anyway, they're doing the presser and Elon is specifically there to answer questions about DOGE because the talking point that was starting to bubble up to the surface is, of course, that Elon is the co-president or is really president, or they have a shadow government, or he's overshadowing Trump, or, you know, that was the other explanation or claim for a constitutional crisis too, because it's not necessarily Trump who's in power, it's Elon who's in power. And it's like, people, shut up and sit down. Okay. So he does this presser to
and if you didn't
questions.
Get to watch it, like, the optics are very interesting. Trump is at the Resolute desk and he's kind of sitting there, hands crossed and looking to the side, and Elon's just standing. There's no sitting. He's standing there with his dark MAGA hat and a black, like,
I think it was like going to Mars, like his t-shirt coat. With a blazer or a coat or something.
And then his little boy's with him. So he's standing the whole time. Trump's sitting. There's a picture of Ronald Reagan in the background. This huge, like.
Well, speaking of the optics, okay, it amazes me how people see things differently. Mm-hmm. I watched that entire presser. And what I saw was Trump, the president, who is also a businessman, by the way, who typically within that realm is more than comfortable to hand off the baton, so to speak, mm-hmm. to provide explanations as to what's going on for the person that is the expert in it or the person that's spearheading the project that he has delegated to him. So that's what I saw. And I saw a presser where Elon was being transparent. He was explaining what they were doing. He was answering the questions, by the way, that we did not see ever answered from the past administration, made himself available. But then you have Aaron Burnett from CNN.
Mm-hmm.
Who goes and says that Musk pushed Trump aside and dominated the presser and talked for 63.5% of the time.
Who was the one standing, taking most of the questions, having the president in this odd, jarring setting, looking up to him? Well, it was Elon. This was Musk's first press conference since Trump's election, and he took over. Trump literally, you know, in all these images, kind of looked like he'd been pushed off to the side because Elon was the center of it. I mean, at times Trump seemed annoyed. I mean, it wasn't just that Musk dominated. He did speak for about 20 of the 32 minutes. So about 63.5%, if you're counting the time. It was that Musk physically owned the entire event. He and his child were the center of the attention.
I mean, do I love the fact that he's just like casually hanging out, hat on? I don't know. You know me. I'm weird about stuff like that. Take your hat off. I don't know. Maybe sit down. I don't know. But that's just me. That's not saying that's what he should have done, because I think that would have not been him. The whole point.
But did you see, my question is, I mean, I don't care about that, honestly, at the end of the day when I'm looking for results. But that also is just me. The question is that the narrative that is coming out from the media, one of the narratives that was coming out from the media at the moment, was trying to pedestal this talking point that Trump isn't really in control, that Elon's in control, and that that presser is an example of how it's
I didn't see that at all.
That's my point. Like, I'm trying to, and that's what I find interesting, is even when Elon is out there answering their questions in a pretty forthright, direct way,
they're instead just using this presser as an opportunity to undermine Trump, say Elon is president, instead of asking questions about what's actually being talked about and the fact that he's being transparent. And then they're saying that he's not actually being transparent. There was this whole exchange between Ken Jennings and what is this chick's name? Kate Baldwin, where she was claiming that
Scott Jennings.
You do this every time.
What did I say? I said Ken Jennings. Ken Jennings.
He's from Jeopardy. I love it.
I was like, why are you making that face? Scott Jennings and CNN's Kate Baldwin. Okay. And they're having this exchange where she's, they're not really being fully, like, by definition, they're not being transparent.
What did you think of that press conference, Scott?
Well, look, Elon Musk, who doesn't need to do this, has, you know, he could be doing anything else. He's got companies. He's the richest guy in the world.
Has
decided to give his own time to a government of a country that he loves, that has given him all this opportunity. I take him at his word that he wants to be transparent, that he invites transparency. Obviously, everybody in the English-speaking world media is looking into him every single day. I would have no fear if I were him. About Congress,
asking questions
and looking into it. I think
the definition of it is he's not been on the front end of this so far. He's not been transparent. I mean,
routine announcements about the things they are finding, and they are inviting questions about the things they are finding every single day.
But by definition, he's not being transparent. They're not providing data for the things that they say they have found evidence of. They just aren't.
The White House has provided.
You can make announcements, and he also did admit that he actually.
So you just don't believe it. I mean, they are providing information. You just choose not to believe that it's true.
I don't think anyone should just believe that it's true. Do you think that people have taken kickbacks of tens of billions of dollars from USAID?
Here's what I think.
Do you believe that?
I think every year.
No, but don't accuse me of just like.
I'm just asking you. Do you believe that there is any level of fraud, waste, fraud, abuse?
No, that's not what you're asking me. And I'm going to ask the question. Don't accuse me of just like.
And so, if you believe that, do you believe that it's possible that they are finding and producing information about it? Of course, that wasn't my question.
What? My question was, by definition, they're not being transparent. They can continue to be successful.
What do you want them to do?
Provide data if they provide data that they have found people. Everyone would want to know if someone has received kickbacks to the tune of tens of millions of
dollars. I don't disagree with you. I love the idea of data. I love the announcements. I love them putting out regular reports of what they're doing.
They have not.
And I love the idea of Congress also bringing them up to report to Congress on what they're finding, because ultimately Congress needs to be engaged in this as well. I have no problem with that, and I don't think they do either, and that's what I heard in his press conference yesterday.
And then also you had Anderson Cooper did the same thing too, where he then he called the former governor of New Hampshire, Chris Sununu.
Sununu, yeah. He called him the D word.
A D word. He says, stop being a D word.
It was surreal, but I got to tell you, I know what you're not showing here. Musk gave seven specific examples off the top of his head of where the corruption and fraud were. I know you didn't play the clips. He was talking about a contractor that had a three-month contract. He was paid for 20 years. He was talking about welfare benefits that were being paid to someone that was technically 150 years old. He was talking about line items in the Treasury that had no justification.
There's no any actual, like, he doesn't present any actual evidence.
Well, he's standing there in the Oval Office. Do you expect him to come in with 10,000 pages? And I have to be clear, to complain about this administration about transparency, when this president takes open questions on a daily basis, yet Joe Biden didn't show up for a press conference in 6 months, is insane. Well, These guys are being extremely transparent. They don't have to sit there and take the questions, but they do. It's all on the website. It's all out there.
It's not transparency to say things that have no factual background. I mean, to say we're cutting, you know, we've found $1 billion or $1 trillion in waste with no specifics, that's just talk. That's not transparency.
It's 23 days in here, guys. 23 days. You're talking about $2.3 billion that was saved last year. These guys are saving $2.3 billion a day.
Right, but
it's incredible.
That's what they're saying. But where's the proof?
You're not going to be satisfied till he shows up with 10,000 pages.
He's giving very specific things.
Yes, he's giving.
But he's not actually giving any evidence of that.
It's all going to come, because what they also said was, if we have to go to Congress, we'll go to Congress.
Right, but
we'll show where it is.
Some of the details that have come out, like the $59 million spent on luxury hotels, it's actually not.
You're talking about the FEMA money that was abused for migrants.
Yeah.
FEMA money for migrants, that's okay now?
No, I'm not saying it's okay. I'm not saying it's okay. Don't put words in my mouth.
So would you stop that? Would you stop that process?
Don't be a dick. The portrayal, what I'm saying is the portrayal by him is.
And this entire talking point is under the umbrella of Elon Musk is just saying things, but he's not really providing evidence for the things that he's finding.
I wanted someone to say, okay, please clarify exactly what you need. Do you want a specific website? Do you want handouts? What do you want? Because a lot of this stuff you can see directly on, like, government websites. You can go to USAID and look at different grants that were given. Lots of that you can see. Do you want them to build a specific website, the Doge website? Because guarantee if they did, they're not going to believe that either. They're going to go to that website and be like, well, how do we know that this is true? So what is your definition of transparency? Because these guys are out here answering all the questions, laying it all out on X. I just want to know what precisely would satisfy them. And the answer is probably nothing.
Nothing. I mean, I think they expose themselves for that, because if you really think about it, like you said, this information is accessible. Now, it is cumbersome to find, but it is accessible. Also, why I find it interesting that the default narrative has been, but he's not providing any evidence. We don't know of what he said. And look, to say absolutely Elon will just shoot things off on X that are not like completely true, as in, for example, the $59 million that went to New York for illegal migrants, are they're not quote unquote illegal migrants because they're here undocumented under the parole, which we've already discussed about how the
semantics.
Biden administration was just flying people in.
Yeah.
That's, you know what I mean? And giving everybody a special status to make it easier for them to enter the United States without any resources, then forcing New York, who is a sanctuary city and has laws that require them to shelter people, like this extra expense. Okay. So that's like the background. So this $59 million, was it all for quote unquote luxury hotels in New York? No, but it was all for these illegal migrants, or these non-documented migrants, or non-citizen migrants, I think is the language that they want to use to specify, to house them, because some money did go to hotels, specifically the Roosevelt Hotel, to give them food and give them resources. So was it for the luxury hotels? Not all of it, but it's like the media is missing the point.
Well, it's the whole thing. The whole issue last week was the Politico argument. it's everywhere now that Benny Johnson and Charlie Kirk were lying when they said that $8.1 million went to Politico.
Okay. Well, was subsidized to Politico.
Right. Language. And it's regardless of if it went directly to Politico or one of the wings of their organization, it went to Politico or Politico Pro. And lots of the money went to BBC Action, New York Times, Washington Post. Whether it came directly from USAID or if it was sent out as a grant from one of the zillion subsidiaries, government taxpayer money went to these places. So the money was spent and it was given to these different organizations. And so they were going to ride high on, oh, see, they're lying. It really didn't. But it did.
And you can't tell me that there isn't some kind of influence that could end up happening.
Right, of course.
When they're dependent on that kind of money.
The point is that no taxpayer dollars should be going to these kinds of things. And $59 million, whether it's just to luxury hotels or hotels and food, clothing, and resources, the money is still being spent. And that's kind of the argument. You know what I mean?
Well, and the thing is that what I'm starting to see is that it almost seems like the media is trying to create this talking point without directly saying that it's kind of like that Elon's pushing misinformation or creating some kind of conspiracy theory of spending of the extent of abuse and mismanagement in the government. Because right. Remember, we had these inspector generals and they were, and I'm like, are you kidding me right now? I'm sorry, I don't trust them. Now, currently, what DOGE has done, because ever since this presser, they have made an update to become even more transparent. They have the DOGE X account where they're constantly posting things. Mm-hmm. They also have created the DOGE website where they also, the X feed feeds into the DOGE website, but then they also are tracking the organizational chart of the federal government and showing like redundancies where cuts can be made. They're also showing the comparison of actual laws versus regulations and how many more regulations there are in comparison to laws. So the DOGE website does exist now. It's providing more information if you guys want to go there. If you want to go digging into things yourself, you can go to the USA spending website and also the Data Republican website. Mm-hmm. USA spending is kind of a pain in the butt. Data Republican is an independent creator that has been using USA spending to create charts and graphs and connect the dots. Both of them are really interesting. You can just drop in, like the other day I dropped in transgender and I got like a list of things. Mm-hmm. And you can go poking around. Cloud seeding, by the way, appeared.
Yeah, it like, did.
The federal government is funding cloud seeding, by the way, for my fellow conspiracy theory types
well,
or whatever.
They took it one step further yesterday in the White House press briefing. Caroline Levitz just said, what more do you guys want? Here, look, I brought handouts.
Elon Musk is the richest man in the world. He's also now one of the most highly scrutinized men in the world alongside President Trump because of what he's doing and the access that he is allowing. So there's great transparency. As for the actual receipts, we are happy to provide them, and I actually brought some today because all of you know I love to bring the receipts. We have contracts upon contracts that we can send and provide this information to you. Let me be very clear. We are not trying to hide anything. We have been incredibly transparent, and we will continue to be. These are screenshots of contracts that DOGE found across our government. This is a DEI contract, $36,000 for U.S. citizenship and immigration services. That is against the president's policies and his America First agenda. This is a $3.4 million contract, a Council for Inclusive Innovation at the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, Department of Commerce, another DEI contract that DOGE identified. I can continue to go through these. Oh, I love this one, $57,000 for climate change in Sri Lanka. What is this doing to continue the interests of the American people? Absolutely nothing. These are the line items across the federal government that DOGE is identifying daily. They're moving very fast. There's a lot of paper that we can show you, but we're happy to do it. This administration has been more than transparent about what DOGE is doing. And here's one of their tweets that they posted about the mine. I believe this is in Pennsylvania, where the federal employee retirement system is being processed. Did anybody know this was even happening in our country before Elon Musk talked about it in the Oval Office yesterday? A lot of Americans didn't. So we are providing transparency and accessibility on a daily basis when it comes to DOGE.
She was like, yeah.
I literally brought receipts, and they are, here's some paper packets for all of you, like you're in second grade, because none of you believe what we have been telling you. Here are the literal receipts. So this whole, like, they're not being transparent, they're not giving us actual information, I don't think people are going to believe that. They're just not.
The whole transparency talking point is just so funny to me when you compare to what we just went through the last 4 years.
I know.
But to clarify things and improve transparency, they have created that website. Mm-hmm. Elon answered a bunch of questions during this presser. There has been talk. They just had that Doge commission where they had people mm-hmm. that were working along with Doge to come and testify. And the things that came out of that commission were absolutely insane to me.
And the hearing itself was, speaking of calling people the D word, my former mayor from California, Robert Garcia.
I find it ironic, of course, that our chairwoman, Congresswoman Green, is in charge of running this. We also know, of course, that Elon Musk is sending his unqualified Doge staff to carry out this agenda across all these agencies. And in some cases, actually teenage staffers. No accountability, no experience, and problematic records. They're trying to rob you, and they're probably a minor. Thank you, and I yield back.
That was so cringy.
But I guess this is just normal now. This is what people do. This is how we talk to one another.
I mean, and he even made that Kendrick Lamar reference. I can't.
A minor. Like, oh, you're hilarious, Robert Garcia. Come on. It's just so embarrassing. It's so unprofessional. It's embarrassing. And it's not funny. And don't do that. I don't know how else to say it.
And like another thing, like he revealed some really interesting things. He brought to people's attention how there were executives within these government agencies that came in with a salary, started off with just a basic salary of $100,000,
$120,000. And now they're millionaires.
Yeah. And it's like, well, that's a little weird. You know what I mean?
And so they've even said they're going to target investigations about the people who are like the lowest paid, but have the highest net value. Like, where are you getting your money?
And then he also brought up what I brought up in the last episode about how things aren't categorized appropriately, which means like you can't do an audit, which is absolutely insane. And everybody are just like cutting checks and not really verifying where these things go. Trump, during that presser, did sign an EO, and it was like a workforce reduction executive order where he proposed to cut staffs through attrition, which means for every 4 departures, there can only be 1 hire.
I don't hate that.
The goal is to eliminate non-essential positions, particularly like in the day programs and redundancies, and that Doge now oversees hiring to prevent wasteful spending. And another thing that you guys need to understand, like Doge, everybody's like, it's Elon. Elon's going, no, it is a team of people, and there are, it's like one Doge member or someone who's been hired under the USDS, which is what it used to be, which if you listen to the last episode.
Started by Obama,
who is then partnered with bureaucrat agency employees.
Mm-hmm.
People specifically that were interviewed by department heads to make sure that we're all on board with the same mission.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it was Bessent that talked about this, who is now the head of the Treasury.
First of all, when you say the Doge team, these are Treasury employees. It is 2 Treasury employees, one of whom I personally interviewed in his final round. There is no tinkering with the system. They are on read-only. They are looking. They can make no changes. It is an operational program to suggest improvement. So we make 1.3 billion payments a year, and this is 2 employees who are working with a group of longstanding employees.
The letter that the Treasury Department sent earlier this week talked about how the team currently does not have access to change the system. Have they at any point this year had the ability to make changes?
Absolutely not. This is no different than you would have at a private company. And by the way, the ability to change the system sits over at the Federal Reserve. So it doesn't even lie in this building. So they could make suggestions on how to change the system, but we don't even run the system.
And if they ask for, if they request the ability to change the system, would you grant that?
No, again, They have no ability to change the system. I have no ability to grant that change. That they can make suggestions, then it would go to the Federal Reserve, and just like any large ERP system, there would be tests, there would be this, there would be that, and then the Fed will determine whether these changes are robust or not.
He specifically says, I've interviewed these people, I talked with these people, they have a Doge member with them. Mm-hmm. Doge is the one that only has read-only access to the information in order for them to do what they are meant to do.
All everybody freak just, out just calm down. It's okay.
Is not.
By the way, Bessette's in Ukraine with Zelensky.
Yeah. So speaking of, we're going to do a hard
pivot.
Pivot. Real hard pivot. To, what do you call it? Foreign policy. I can't even remember words anymore. So a lot happened in the span of like an hour, 2 hours.
So we may have stopped a war.
Technically, let's start from the beginning. It started the day before.
So hostage release.
Correct. So there was a hostage release of, or prisoner release of Mark Fogel. So Mark Fogel is a U.S. teacher who traveled to Russia, and he had in his possession medical marijuana. A very similar case, by the way, to Brittany Griner, who was also traveling to Russia for a, I don't know, basketball exhibition or something like that. Mm-hmm. And she had some oil or something like that, some medical marijuana oil.
Let's make sure we clarify that her last name is Griner and not Grinder, like the app. I just want to throw that out there.
Okay. Thank you. I have issues with names, okay? So they were literally both imprisoned at about the same time. I think Fogel was imprisoned before Griner, if I'm not mistaken. Okay,
so but why do you think that Griner was released before Fogel?
I think it's maybe her profile, and because of diversity, equity, inclusion. I'm going to say it out loud. I see.
I'm not arguing.
Because it was the Biden administration who had just came in. They were both imprisoned about the same time for virtually the same reason. And has been revealed since Fogel's release that he was not even part of the negotiations when they negotiated Griner to come out, who, by the way, I think was exchanged for a high profile arms criminal or something like that.
It was, some people were saying it was not an even trade.
It was not. Okay. Now, we don't know the details of what the exchange was, or if there was an exchange, or what the agreement was that led to Fogel being released. But the background story, which I think is really interesting, is that Fogel's mother was at the Butler rally and asked Trump to help her get him out.
And he said he would. He said he would if he was elected.
And it was all done. I don't know. It was like crazy. I saw he comes home. He's like kissing the ground, the American ground. He's drinking a beer in the White House with the American flag around his shoulder. I just thought it was really cool.
Yep. Where there was Brittany Griner, who wasn't she like super anti-America?
Oh, so like, until she ended up in prison.
I think the takeaway is just don't take weed to Russia. Don't do that. It's inadvisable. You're not coming home. Okay.
It's not a good idea. So that was how everything, I'm assuming, started. I don't have any like background information, but literally the next day, Trump announces that he has had a call with Putin. It's like an hour and a half long call with Putin. Then he also says, and then I'm also going to talk to Zelensky, right?
So and he did.
And he did.
Yep. Zelensky released a statement, said it went great. We're looking forward to peace in the region.
He also negotiated.
Did Trump just end war
with a phone call? Now, we don't know yet.
We don't know.
Clearly, things are going to be negotiated. Things need to work out. This also was happening right after Hegseth. Oh my God. Can we get an old cabinet back so I can have a nap? All these young guns.
He's working
cabinet.
Out. Hegseth is working out in Germany.
Doing PT with the biggest dude I've ever seen in my life.
I thought Pete Hegseth was in good shape. And then it's showing all these soldiers. And
they were Green Beret, I believe. Yeah. So, I mean, anyways. So you have the Secretary of Defense doing PT with the Green Berets are stationed in Germany. He then also does this announcement or clarifies that we got to be realistic. Things aren't going to go back to the way things were before.
The United States does not believe that NATO membership for Ukraine is a realistic outcome of a negotiated settlement. Instead, any security guarantee must be backed by capable European and non-European troops. If these troops are deployed as peacekeepers to Ukraine at any point, they should be deployed as part of a non-NATO mission and they should not be covered under Article 5. There also must be robust international oversight of the line of contact. To be clear, as part of any security guarantee, there will not be U.S. troops deployed to Ukraine.
Of course, this has made people's or the left's head explode, saying, of course, he's going to side with Russia. Look, I think clearly, like, something has to happen here.
Right.
Both of these countries are tired of the war. They've lost hundreds of thousands of people. And some kind of deal, some kind of resolution needs to happen. Speaking of deals, okay, so Trump is acting fast and furious on this whole Russia-Ukraine thing. Like, he is on everything. So Rubio, Ratcliffe, Waltz, and Witkoff. Witkoff is the Middle East envoy. So we're talking about the Secretary of State, the head of the CIA, the National Security Advisor, and the Middle East envoy are all scheduled to travel to Munich on Friday, so tomorrow, to meet with Zelensky to talk these deals. Also, yesterday, if I'm not mistaken, Bessette arrived
in Ukraine, and he met with Zelensky.
And so I was like, why is Bessette, this Treasury Department, like, head in Ukraine? So this is really interesting, and this is something that a lot of people aren't talking about. But Trump signed an e-order for what is called the Sovereign Wealth Fund, or the U.S. Sovereign Fund. And I was like, what exactly does that mean? So apparently what Bessette is doing right now is that, as opposed to the Biden administration and other EU countries who have been cutting checks to the Ukraine and giving them loans or just giving them money, which requires us to essentially print money and use taxpayer money to fund this foreign war, Trump has proposed that Zelensky be willing to negotiate that the United States have access to mineral rights, which they have plentiful mineral rights in the Ukraine, as payment for our help with the war in Ukraine,
which is to the tune of almost $200 billion.
Which actually, by the way, there's like a few billion dollars that are missing that even Zelensky said.
We don't have fraud in the government. No,
but no fraud in the government. So Bessette is now over in Ukraine as the Treasury head to negotiate this deal, because that money is going to be paid to the United States, or that the money that is accrued from those mineral rights, not only will we be able to get the mineral rights, but then we'll also be able to use those funds in this sovereign fund.
Just getting stuff done. Just getting stuff done.
Help and fund the federal government.
Yeah. I'm here for that.
As opposed to taxpayer money.
I'm surprised that Caroline Leavitt didn't bring that up, or nobody brought it up.
I think this is the goal. Obviously, it hasn't been negotiated yet. He's over there working it out. If this works out, it'll be the first big thing that goes into the sovereign wealth fund.
Yeah.
And I just think it's a really interesting and new approach.
Yeah.
As opposed to just printing money and giving money over to them and then not knowing where it's going. Like, now they actually have some financial skin in the game.
But it's a strategic interest for us as a country as well. We're going to get paid back, but we're also going to have access to something we didn't before.
Yeah.
I mean, this is out of the box thinking. That's what Trump does.
And this is what happens when you have a businessman running it instead of a bureaucrat. So I just thought that was really interesting.
Correct.
So we'll see what happens. In addition, there was also three prisoners at release that were in prison in Belarus, which is shares a border with Russia. One of them was American, who has decided to remain anonymous, which is okay, fine. Totally, I get it. So yeah, needless to say, it has been very interesante for the last... Like, everyone is overwhelmed. We're all overwhelmed, but they're like, it is like a fire hose now. So we'll see what happens with foreign policy, because there's a lot of things going on, because we still have the whole Gaza situation, which I need to double check on and see what's going on there. I haven't had time for that.
Stay tuned. Because there's the confirmation of RFKJ today.
Tulsi Gabbard is now our DNI director. Yep.
It's just a lot, guys. So
it's a lot.
We don't talk about something you want to know about, message us, but we're trying our level best.
Well, here is a nice little bonus for our paying supporters and why you should consider being a paying supporter. We will be recording our second episode of Unfiltered, which is exclusive to our paying supporters. And I think we're just going to do like a spillover episode. We're going to talk about all the things that we do not have time to talk about. So if you want even more information on what this president and his young gun cabinet is doing right now, which is almost complete. All the mm-hmm. pieces are coming together once we get RFKJ confirmed, which looks like he's mm-hmm. going to make it. Mm-hmm. I mean, besides the Department of Education, which I feel like there's not really a rush to do that because they literally want to get rid of the Department of Education.
No, we're at the end.
We're in the home stretch. And
so
everybody,
Saturday's Unfiltered will be fine because we can also talk about the stuff that isn't necessarily headlines, but is just interesting, weird.
And conversations that are going yeah. on.
It'll be a fun episode.
We recommend that you become a paid subscriber to get access to that episode. But before we wrap us up, we want to do something a little bit fun because we are coming to the end of the week. Things do get a little crazy around here. Mm-hmm. So Rachel has some questions for me, some ideas.
Yes, and I thought it would be fun if we ended our Thursday episodes talking about
more personal things.
Yeah, something we're watching, doing, eating, reading, whatever. I don't know. I get fun ideas.
I think it should be interesting because our taste are polar
totally
opposite.
They really are. So it'll be something for everybody. So this week we're going to start with something we're watching. So it can either be a television show or a movie. Mercedes, you go first. What are you watching?
I'm always watching. You would think that I don't have time to watch TV. Mm-hmm. I do. I make time for it. Okay. Like, I don't know how, but I do. Currently, I'm finishing up the last season of Severance.
What
which
is
that? Oh my gosh. Okay. The fact that you have just asked me that and now I have to try and explain the show.
Well, don't. I mean,
it's such a mind bend. Okay. So this is on Apple TV.
I don't have that.
Okay. It's on its second season. It is directed and created by Ben Stiller, of all people.
Interesting.
So the premise of it is, let me see if I can make this make sense and make it simple. There are people who work for this company, this large conglomerate, and they can sever. So to sever means that in your everyday, you're one person. And when you go into work, you basically lose your consciousness and you become this other person in work.
Is it like sci-fi?
It's weird. I don't know. It's like really, it's like Twin Peaks meets Lost, mind-bendy kind of stuff. And so it's, there's this conspiracy going on. You can't really figure out who's running stuff. There's like these questions of the morals of, are the people that are working in the company who are called innies and the people that, like, the normal people are called outies. We're not talking about belly buttons. Okay.
This is very odd.
I know. It's really weird. There's this whole thing about the people, the innies who work for the company that don't know, they don't ever see the outside. They're not conscious of what their outie does. And their outie isn't conscious of what their innie does.
Oh, so it's almost like The Matrix.
I think that's a decent comparison. But then also within their departments, the work that they do is like really weird. There's people feeding goats. And then there's another room where the main character works. He sits in front of a terminal and he just puts numbers into a basket. I know it sounds so weird, but
sounds very weird.
I promise you, it's a really good show because you're trying to figure out, I don't want to spoil it for everyone, but there's like a lot of mysteries going on and you're trying to figure out the mysteries, who knows what. There's mm-hmm. one person that is like affiliated with a company that is an innie, but is technically an outie. And then you're trying to figure what? Out, I'm okay. telling you, all this right. is why I was like, don't ask me that question.
No, I bet you there's other people out there who are totally love it. Favorite show ever.
If anybody is watching Severance and can give a more proper explanation of it, please drop it in the comments. I would really appreciate it because I don't think I sold it really well, but it's a really good show. It's a little bit of a mind bender. But if you want something that is a little more traditional,
mm-hmm.
I've been watching the show and it's called, my husband actually really loves it. And I think it's called CB Stryker on HBO Max. And it is a very traditional PI type of show. So think, I don't know, kind of like a Columbo kind of deal.
Oh, fun.
But current. And so is actually based off of the book, I think it was Cuckoo or something like that, that J.K. Rowling wrote under a pseudonym after.
Oh, wait. Yeah.
Yeah. We after she finished up with Harry Potter.
The casual. I don't know. I know what you're talking about, though.
Yeah. So the premise of it is that CB Stryker is this PI. The show is, of course, set in the UK. He has an assistant and they're solving these crimes. And each season, I think the first season has two investigations, but every season, I think they're on their third or fourth season, has had its own investigation that lasts through the full season. And the seasons are really short. They're like 4 or 5 episodes. And I'm in the current one. And there's like, it's 4 deep right now. Okay. So that's what I'm watching.
Okay. Mine is a little bit different. Sean and I don't get to watch tons of television together because by the time we get into bed, we are both so tired. We do enjoy it. We always have. Right now with our kids, because we do watch television with our kids, what we try and do is find like a TV show that we all can get engaged with, and that's what we watch. So we have had lots of fun over the years with different shows. Right now, we are rewatching. I've already watched it, and so has Sean. But one night we happened to just be sitting around, and Downton Abbey came on, and the girls were like, oh, didn't we watch one of those episodes one time? But they weren't into it. It was like years ago, and they're a little bit older now. So we just watched it and they fell in love. So we have started watching Downton Abbey an episode or so every other night or whatever. And it's just a blast. And for parents who are concerned about content, you can use the app VidAngel and you can select what things you omitted, like profanity or like sexual stuff. You can just say, nope, I don't want that, and it'll cut it right out.
So it doesn't mess with the story. Well, usually the sexual stuff doesn't really add a whole lot to it.
It doesn't. There are some situational things that later will be mentioned. So if you're like, my 17-year-old knows what's going on, and even my 14-year-old does too. They're like, okay. But, you know, it's great. And so they're having a blast. Like, my 10-year-old loves it. She loves all the outfits, and she loves the...
Downton Abbey's a great show. I watched it.
And, oh, yeah. So my 10-year-old threw us a Downton Abbey party on Saturday night. She made posters and tea for everybody, and it's really sweet. So we're watching that as a family because our favorite show, All Creatures on PBS, All Creatures Great and Small, that... is done. We just finished that season. Highly recommend. But for Sean and I, once we get into bed right now, we're watching Band of Brothers.
I've never seen that, believe it or not.
It's great. Nothing like watching people get like their limbs blown off right before you fall asleep. But it is truly, it's very, very well produced. It's good and entertaining. And yeah, I highly recommend it. This is Sean's. He's watched it multiple times. He loves it.
You know what I'm rewatching recently that's on Netflix? That what? Had my husband in stitches the other day was Home Improvement.
Oh, I remember that show.
Yeah,
oh my
like
gosh.
The entire, and all seasons are currently right now on Netflix.
Oh, I Home throw that on for the kids. I bet you my kids would love that.
It was the funniest thing. So my husband is very handy and he does a lot of stuff around the house, right? And so there was this one, I was just looking at him like, dude, it's not that funny. But there was this, I think it was like the second or third episode where he's installing some insane thing for the dishwasher to make it more powerful or whatever. Yeah. And the whole premise.
Oh my gosh. Doesn't he always say that? Like more power?
Yeah. So
all coming back to me.
Is he's supposed to be a handyman, but he's an inept handyman that's always wanting more power. So things go sideways. Yeah. So he's installing this thing in the dishwasher and he doesn't properly like shut the power off. Like he just flips a breaker and he's like, yeah, sure. That'll work. And in the process of installing it, he gets himself electrocuted. And I turn to my husband and he is in tears laughing.
Oh, I bet you we should go back and watch that. My kids would love it. And so would Sean.
It was the funniest thing. And I'm like, why is it so funny? Because it's so relatable because he does stuff around the house all the time. And he has done that to himself.
It's all those old shows that we've showed our kids Perfect Strangers.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I know. Alf, we did. Meet the Hendersons, was that it? Harry and the Hendersons. I'm telling you go back into that 80s, that decade had some really fun television that just, you rewatch it and you're like, we were entertained by this. Endlessly entertained.
Yeah. So if you're looking for a good old-fashioned one, Home Improvement is currently on Netflix and it's worth a watch. So
aren't you guys so excited? We did this new segment. We will do another one next Thursday. Equally exciting.
I'm just impressed with I'm very proud of myself that none of my recommendations were cult or serial killers because that's usually where it goes.
That will pop up, I'm sure.
All right. I'm going to go ahead and wrap us up for today's episode of Rivera and Reeves. Thank you so much for hanging out with us today. If you are new here, congratulations. We are now friends and you are hitting that follow button because we're just like so awesome. Leave us a 5-star rating also and a comment because those like they help our feelings and
they
also
make our day.
They make our day and they help the podcast grow. Reminder, If you want access to ad-free episodes and our unfiltered episodes, which is exclusive for paying subscribers, we will have a new episode on Monday. And so please consider becoming a paid subscriber to get access to that content. I think that's it. We're done.
Take a breath. Go get your coffee because the day's starting.
I know.
Who knows what
happens.
Donald Trump has in store for us today.
If you cannot get enough of what is going on with this administration, make sure that you're following both of us on our Instagrams, where we're covering in the moment news on our Instagram stories. All right, we're done. That's it. Here's a reminder that the media is trash and we have no tolerance for it. Thank you. Bye.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall Credit Card Bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.